This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Canada provides developmental assistance to a number of countries. According to the government website, the focus of this aid is increasing food security, stimulating economic growth, and supporting governance. However, significant sums in Canadian aid are spent promoting international mining initiatives. Eve Engler says the Canadian International Development Agency has been using public money to help out private mining interests. Eve is the author of Canada in Africa. His newest book is titled A Propaganda System: How Governments, Corporations, Media, and Academia Sell War and Exploitation. He has joined us by phone from Nelson, BC. Welcome back, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
What are some of the countries that CETA is working in?
Well, CETA is working in many places around the world, but in terms of advancing mining interests, there would be dozens and dozens of places. In the Canada and Africa book, I list all kinds of places like Mozambique, Ethiopia, Congo, Tanzania, many other countries, where Canadian aid has gone to enabling prospecting, geological prospecting, also has gone to supporting educational programs in the mining sector.
How does that money end up in prospecting?
Well, basically, Canadian aid pays for geological prospecting. A recent article I published about a month ago started off based upon a press release from a Canadian company, Karube, who operates in Jamaica. And in their press release about getting a major mining project off the ground, they state explicitly that in the early 90s, the Canadian International Development Agency had played a role in finding the resources that they were now about to start exploiting. So the Canadian government finances initiatives either through local governments or through NGOs, local groups that prospect in different areas to find resources that in the short term wouldn't be turned directly into Canadian profits, but in the medium and longer term, in a situation where Canadian companies dominate international mining, prospecting territory around the world will generally benefit Canadian corporations since they dominate that sector.
So how do the CETA get connected to the local government mining industry?
First of all, half of all mining projects in Africa, international mining projects in Africa, are run by Canadian companies. A big chunk of what Canadian diplomacy does in the global south, and particularly in African countries, which are heavily dependent on the mining sector, is they introduce Canadian officials to local officials in the natural resources sector. There's also examples where NGOs, Canadian NGOs, enable the setting up of Canadian mining companies. A prime example is a former board member of Plan Canada, one of the biggest global NGOs, Plan Canada, Bernard LaSalle. He states very openly that it was his relations in Burkina Faso and in West Africa more generally that he basically met Blaise Compaoré through his role, then the head of Burkina Faso. He met him through his role with the NGO Plan Canada, and then that personal relationship then led him to actually launch the company SAMAFA, which is the biggest mining company based in Montreal, and then it led to this incredibly profitable relationship between Benoit Lassalle, SAMAFA, and Blaise Compaoré. Blaise Compaoré, of course, was ousted after 27-year his regime was ousted a couple years ago by popular protests. Canadian officials are working on a day-to-day basis with local officials in African governments, and a major part of what they do is introduce Canadian mining officials to the proper people in the local governments.
And I understand that CETA has also been able to influence mining legislation in some of these countries.
I think CETA has had a hand in shaping mining legislation, or more specifically, liberalizing mining codes in many countries around the world. That takes place on two different levels. One, directly, where Canada is doing it, and also indirectly through the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, where Canada has pumped, in my estimation, into the hundreds of millions of dollars in supporting structural adjustment programs. A big part of structural adjustment programs have been about liberalizing mining codes. That's been a common pattern in different structural adjustment programs, particularly in Africa and some Latin American countries. Specifically, CETA more directly has spent tens of millions of dollars in shaping and mining codes. The best documented example is in Colombia. In 1997, CETA began an $11 million initiative with a group in Calgary, a mining institute that's very close to the mining sector in Calgary. And over a multi-year period, they basically rewrote Colombia's mining code, and they actually got the mining code adopted, worked with some mining companies, worked with some groups in Colombia, and got the government to adopt a new mining code in 2001, which reduced royalty rates that companies had to pay from between 5 to 10% down to 0.4%. It also gave mining companies these added rights to export timber that they had felled for their mining operations, and a series of other benefits to the mining companies. This is an incredibly pro-mining company legislation that was bitterly resisted by labor unions, by indigenous groups, and that was all made available because of an $11 million contract from Canada's aid agency.
So none of what you're describing sounds like increasing food security or supporting governance. Can you unpack that for us?
If you go to the history of Canadian aid has never been, I've pointed out there's four motivations for Canadian aid at a very big picture level. The first motivation is it's been as geostrategic interests, and that goes back to the Colombo Plan, where Canada began aid to the Global South in the early 1950s, and the objective is quite clearly to make sure that to help India primarily, but Pakistan and other South Asian countries stay in the Western fold after they were nervous that China had just had its nationalist communist revolution 49. They were nervous that there would be a radical decolonization in India primarily. And so Canadian aid went, as part of the Colombo Plan, went to propping up the sort of elite sectors that were more Western oriented. So the main motivation, and right up until today, the main motivation of Canadian aid is a geopolitical tool. And one way you see that is where what I call the aid intervention principle. So where the U.S. or Canada are killing people, you will generally find a significant amount of aid, Canadian aid, going into those places. So in the early or mid-2000s, the three top recipients of Canadian aid were Afghanistan, Iraq, and Haiti. What was common to those three countries was that in all cases there was Canadian or U.S. troops at war or occupying those places. So the first motivation of Canadian aid always has been a geostrategic objective. The second motivation has been to advance Canadian corporate interests abroad, and it happens at a whole bunch of levels, as the mining sector is one example, but there's all kinds of other sectors. The third motivation of Canadian aid is to co-opt domestic forces, to co-opt sort of progressive, liberal-minded forces, and to tie them into Canadian aid and take young people who are sort of internationalist-minded and focus them on NGO charity projects rather than challenging government policy at home. The fourth motivation of Canadian aid is what most people think Canadian aid is about, which is about helping people and you know, generally providing aid to the impoverished of the world. The fact that the Canadian Aid Agency, or now Global Affairs Canada, which is what CETA has been collapsed into, the fact that they don't publicly list advancing the interests of Canadian mining corporations as a big part of their objective should not surprise anyone who knows a little bit of the history of Canadian aid.
So I know that Ottawa has helped to fund some educational projects relating to mining, like the Zimbabwe School of Mines. What are your thoughts about that and how that fits into CETA's objectives?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, not knowing enough of the details about the specific project, you know, an educational initiative that's related to the mining sector can have real benefits for people in Zimbabwe, or another initiative that they pursued in Ethiopia could have real benefits to some Ethiopians and some Zimbabweans. I wouldn't just sort of ipso facto be opposed to that funding, but I think you have to see it in a bit of a bigger picture, which is that it's tied into a much broader Canadian pro-mining objectives. And an important part of that is the fact that two important parts of that. One is that, so while they're putting money into educational initiatives around mining in Zimbabwe, Ethiopia, Senegal, and other places in Africa and elsewhere, they're also, the Canadian government has blocked any effort to end public support for Canadian mining companies found to be engaged in major abuses abroad, right? So they don't want to put any restrictions on the Canadian company's ability to just basically abuse communities. And there's all kinds of examples of Canadian companies abusing communities. The worst example on the African continent of recent years is Barrick Gold's mine in Tanzania, where there's a minimum of 65 people who have been killed by mining paid for security forces. Some reports say it's more than 200 people have been killed over the past decade at the Canadian Barrick Gold run mine in Tanzania. So on one hand, they don't want to sort of restrict the abuses of Canadian mining companies. But the other part is, the bigger part is, that where are the profits from the mining sector going? Where are the profits? Where are the benefits from mining in African countries, Zimbabwe or Ethiopia or Senegal? Where are most of those benefits going? And my reading of the situation is that most of the benefits are going actually to investors in Toronto and Vancouver and Montreal, that are invested on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Also, a high proportion of the people who do the technical jobs come from abroad. A lot of the managers come from abroad. So generally, there's a few well-paying jobs for people from the local communities or local countries. So is this really a model of development? Are if you take it at a big picture level, are African countries and African governments, is this the way to build up your economy, or is this actually a way of entrenching underdevelopment? And I would argue that there's a lot of evidence to suggest that dependence on extracting and shipping out raw resources is a model of underdevelopment, and I think that's to a large extent what Canada is entrenching on the African continent, at least.
So what can we do to encourage more transparency about the work that CETA is doing?
There'd be lots of things that can be done in terms of that. I mean, I think that, first of all, we should be not so... We should question organizations that receive CETA funding, first of all. I think many people, progressive-minded people, believe that so-called non-governmental organizations are sort of a model for a better world, and most of those groups receive 30, 40, 60, 70% of their budget from the Canadian International Development Agency. And that puts a great deal of restrictions on their political capacity to challenge Canadian foreign policy, to challenge the Canadian aid agency. And you'll find that the main criticism you find from CETA-funded NGOs about Canadian aid is just call for more Canadian aid. But if Canadian aid is being used to kill people, as it was very clearly in Haiti in the mid-2000s, as it's been used to prop up Western occupation in Afghanistan or Iraq, more aid isn't necessarily something that's a good thing. Just because they call it aid doesn't really mean anything. So I think one thing we need to be, as progressive-minded people, we need to be very careful and very critical of organizations that receive significant chunks of their funding from the aid agency, because the aid agency is an arm of Canadian foreign policy. It has very clear political interests. I think more generally, the whole mining sector, not specifically just about CETA or the aid agency, the whole mining sector is an area that we need to bring in some of these just really modest reforms that have been proposed to end public support for Canadian mining companies found to be engaged in major abuses abroad. There was a Bill C-300 that was defeated in 2010 by only a handful of votes in the House of Commons. That's something that should be, a variation of that at least, should be pursued again today. The whole mining justice solidarity movement, there's activism going on those issues and challenging CETA's role. Progressive-minded people should be engaged in.
Well, thank you very much for joining us again, Yves.
Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Eve Engler. Eve is the author of Canada in Africa, 300 Years of Aid and Exploitation. His most recent book is titled A Propaganda System, How Governments, Corporations, Media, and Academia Sell War and Exploitation. The book is now available through Fernwood Publishing.